I'm Faith Middleton, and this show is about the richness of life. Thanks for listening in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. Neuroscience, how mindfulness increases well-being. Neuroscientists are verifying that practicing mindful awareness promotes neuroplasticity in the human brain, activating the resonance circuit that leads to a greater sense of well-being. Our guest, renowned mindfulness teacher Dr. Jack Kornfield, will explain how mindfulness works quickly to transform neural circuits in the brain, enhance inner and interpersonal attunement, and deepen the capacity for empathy and loving kindness. According to Kornfield and other psychologists, it's possible through mindful awareness to increase secure attachment with another, heal the lingering effects of trauma, and strengthen resilience in an unpredictable world. Who is Dr. Jack Kornfield, our guest? Well, while he was in the Peace Corps, he trained as a Buddhist monk in Thailand, India, and Burma. He's taught meditation since 1974, and he's one of the key teachers to explain Buddhist mindfulness practices to the West. After returning to the United States, Kornfield founded the Insight Meditation Society in Barre, Massachusetts, not far from our New Haven studio. And he did this along with his co-founder, Sharon Salzberg, our previous guest, and Joseph Goldstein. His books, Kornfield's, have sold more than a million copies. They've been translated into 20 languages. They include A Wise Heart, A Guide to the Universal Teachings of Buddhist Psychology, Buddha's Little Instruction Book, Awakening Right Where You Are, and After the Ecstasy, The Laundry. Jack Kornfield and Dan Siegel will present a two-day event, The Neuroscience of Well-Being, Mindfulness in Love, November 15th and 16th for the Omega Institute in New York City. That event will be held at the New York Society for Ethical Culture. Now, both new and experienced practitioners are invited to that event, and both new and experienced people with mindful awareness are invited to listen. You are invited now to listen to this show, even if you've never tried this before. Jack, I'm happy you're here.
Hi, Faith. I'm very happy to be with you. Thank you.
How simply can you explain what mindful awareness is for people who've never practiced this?
Mindful awareness is this capacity that we all have to be here and present with a direct experience without judgment, without resisting or grasping it, seeing it clearly, and living with a responsive wisdom in the present. So what that means is that when you walk down the street, very often you're lost in thought. Or even when you're with your family, these days you can see a family at the dinner table and half the people are on their smartphones and their devices. There are ways that we're not present for one another or present for the people and the life around us. There are equally ways we're not present for our own body and what it needs or our spirit. To become mindful is very simply to pay deliberate attention. And then through these wonderful scientific studies and papers, it shows that within 6 or 8 hours or 8 weeks of training, it begins to change the nervous system and allow us to live more with more contentment and more resiliency here in the present.
I don't know if you saw this, and as you listen, you might be thinking, oh, I keep reading about mindfulness lately. The New York Times on Sunday, for instance, ran a story about young people flocking to yoga and learning mindfulness techniques now at the same time to de-stress. So there's growing appeal among all ages, and I find that interesting, Jack.
Well, it says something about the stress levels of people in our society, the complexity and speed. And also it says something really wonderful that young people and people elsewhere are being called to those practices and those capacities that we have as humans to help us regulate, calm, center ourselves, and that also bring a greater spirit of compassion or loving kindness.
What do neuroscientists tell us? You touched on this just a little bit. What do neuroscientists tell us about what mindfulness does to the brain? We talk about things like neuroplasticity. I really don't know what that means. It sounds great, though.
Neuroplasticity, which has only been understood in the last few decades, says that how you pay attention and the way you focus your attention begins to change your brain and your nervous system. So, for example, if a person who's 80 years old decides to take up the violin and practice it for hours every day, within some months, a brain scan would show that the areas of the brain that are connected with his fingers on a string of the violin have grown new neurons and new neural connections and are much more robust. Whatever we pay attention to begins to change our capacities. So that with mindfulness in these studies, it shows that learning how to be mindful, breathing mindfully, sitting with a sense of presence and openness, increases our ability to be present with less mind wandering. The neuroscientists show that it gives us a greater capacity to approach challenges rather than to run away or be frightened or avoid them. It shows a kind of structural integration that our feelings and our body and our thoughts become more fully integrated in the present. Mm.
What we're doing now is describing a thing, and this is kind of wild to do, what I'm about to ask you to do. I wonder if we could take a couple of minutes to do a very short exercise just to show. Here are our listeners. Our listeners right now are at home. They're in the car. Maybe somebody's running through a park. Just about everywhere listening because of the way things work now. So could we spend just a couple minutes doing an exercise of mindful awareness just to feel what that is like?
With pleasure. So whatever situation you find yourself in as you listen, if you're driving or if you're running through the park or if you're seated on a couch somewhere, begin first to become mindful of your body. If you're running, feel the rhythm of your breath and your feet on the earth and sense the air moving past. If you're seated, feel yourself, the buttocks, the legs and feet on the chair or the ground. If you are driving, feel your hands on the wheel, notice the sights that are whizzing by. Sense yourself quite present. And as you do, begin to feel the state of your body. Is there ease and relaxation? Are there areas of tension or holding or stress? And with mindfulness, the first step is not to change anything, but simply to notice it, to hold your body with a kind attention. And already as you do, if there's areas of stress or tension, you'll find that simply by noticing, they begin naturally to want to soften and release and open.
That's great. This is best-selling author and mindful awareness teacher, Dr. Jack Kornfield. He will speak with Dan Siegel November 15th and 16th for Omega in New York City. That title of their presentation will be The Neuroscience of Well-Being, Mindfulness, and Love. And you can Google Omega for information about that conference. And also at our website, you will be able to listen to this conversation and practice this anytime you want. You can go to WNPR.org and click on Programs for the Faith Middleton Show. This will be there. Now, how does that? That is quite simple. To sit, I'm sitting in my chair, my interview chair, and I was doing exactly what you mentioned, and I practice mindfulness quite a bit. How does that simple practice of that kind of sharp awareness, like watching yourself, the world around you on a screen, how does that change the brain?
As I said, what you pay attention to and how you direct attention, scientists have now found, begins to increase the neural connections of that particular dimension of the brain and the mind.
So let's say you felt when you checked, where do I feel this awareness right now in my body? And you think, oh, I feel a little stress in my stomach or whatever it might be. How does that connect with what the brain then does?
So let me see if I can explain it. Mm-hmm. You start by becoming aware of your body, and then as you become present here, you might also notice various feelings and thoughts. Perhaps as you relax your body, you notice that there's a sadness or a grief because of some loss or problem you're facing that's been underground and you haven't noticed it, but it's there through the day. Or maybe there's excitement because you have this great event coming up. Or maybe there's worry and fear. And with the same kind of attention you give to your body, you then begin to notice also the various feelings and states of mind. Mm-hmm. As you do so, there is a natural spaciousness, mindfulness. Sometimes it's described together as mindfulness and compassion. I might translate it simply as loving awareness. And as you do so, instead of being caught in the worry or caught in the fear or caught in the expectation or the memory, or instead of being caught by the tension in the body and being angry about it or resisting it, as you hold it with loving awareness, with mindfulness, the brain begins to regulate to the neural capacity to be with experience in an integrated and calm way starts to develop in you. And there comes a resiliency so that when fear or confusion or worry or anger arise, by training in mindfulness, you notice what arises, there's less reactivity to it, and there's a quicker recovery from difficulty.
Mm-hmm. This is Jack Kornfield. Please stay where you are, because you just said to be with your experience, and that is the key. There are a lot of myths about some state of nirvana. We want to get at that, too. We'll be right back after a quick break and continue our conversation with one fascinating man, Dr. Jack Kornfield. Stay with us. Faith Middleton, neuroscience, how mindfulness increases well-being. Dr. Jack Kornfield is my guest. His many books are bestsellers. He has sold about 1 million copies. They have been translated into 20 languages. He is one of the people who brought an understanding of mindfulness from the East to the West. And he is speaking at 4 Omega in New York City, November 15th and 16th. And if you want information about that, you can go to our website, WNPR.org, and click on Programs for the Faith Middleton Show. We'll tell you how to be in contact. Dr. Kornfield, there is this idea, I think through myth, through movies, through records, that travelogues, you're supposed to be mindful, meditate, reach some kind of spooky place of nirvana, and that would be the sign that you have landed. You know, you have gotten it. And so what happens quite often is when mindfulness teachers are having classes, students say, you know, what, I'm not getting it. That thing is not happening to me. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. There are all kinds of myths and stories of some special state that you get, or maybe you go to the Himalayas and have some extraordinary experience. And it's true that we have extraordinary experiences in our life, sometimes walking in the mountains or making love or listening to an amazing piece of music, or being at the birth or the death of someone, the sense of our small separateness falls away, and we feel the genuine connection with all of life and with the mystery. And this happens with mindfulness meditation too, but it's not the point to get to those experiences and have them come or stay. Mindfulness is a way of living in presence and mystery wherever you are. And it's practiced the same way you practice music. If you were to learn piano, you wouldn't start by being a good musician. You have to learn the notes and practice some. In the same way, the nervous system and our inner capacity to develop mindful presence is possible for anyone with a little bit of practice. And the science shows it doesn't take very much. It's not done as a grim duty. It actually is an invitation to find calm and ease and joy in each moment, wherever you are.
Hmm.
And even when you first start to try it, you notice that attention wanders and you're lost in thoughts a lot. Instead of judging with mindfulness, you simply notice, oh, this is the thought stream. And as Julia Child said in her instructions on her television show, she said, if you're in the kitchen and you drop the lamb, you can just pick it up. Who's going to know? And in the same non-judgmental way, with a little smile, you notice, oh, this is the mind that wanders. This is a judging mind. This is the mind that has worry in it. And with mindfulness or loving awareness, it's as if you can bow to that experience, you acknowledge it, and you realize that you can be the loving witness of that. And as you grow in the capacity to center and calm yourself, then the range of experiences that come don't throw you off, and you become both resilient and inwardly there comes to well-being.
Mm.
It's quite tangible.
Yeah. Somehow this reminds me, I don't know if it's helpful or not, but when students say, I'm not getting anywhere, or any person says that, it reminds me of dieting in a way. When you diet, you don't look down and say, well, there goes an ounce disappearing on me. You can't see it. And you have faith that if you keep at it, something positive will occur. Is it like that, do you think?
Yes, there is a certain faith that through practice and some training, just as in dieting, if you set a healthy intention for yourself, there is to have a healthy diet. Here it is a healthy intention to care for your own mind and heart. Let me practice mindfulness and loving kindness moment by moment. And little by little, it begins to change you, and you find yourself more present with the people that you love, more resilient with difficulties, more able to focus at work. All the kinds of things that matter come through your willingness to train yourself and to continue with it, just as you say.
We are right now in a time of neuroscience. So many articles, movies, documentaries, all about this. And the word that gets tossed around a lot is attunement. How does mindful awareness, the practice of it, enhance attunement? How do you define attunement?
Attunement means that your attention and your nervous system are resonating with or connecting with another person. That's the original meaning of attunement. And when Dr. Dan Siegel teaches about this in our seminar in New York, and he has all this wonderful research that he talks about, that if a mother or father are attuned to their baby, their infant, then the baby feels that attunement and thrives and grows. If there's misattunement and the parents are unable to sense the needs of the child or are in great difficulty in some way, as through addictions or war or some great, you know, problematic circumstance, then the child doesn't feel any attunement, and there it doesn't develop the sense of deep connection or trust with others. It turns out that this capacity to be tuned can be learned, and there are education programs teaching mindfulness to young mothers, teaching mindfulness to teenagers to kids in schools in ways that the research shows really enhances them. In addition, the attunement then can become internal as well as external. So you can be, well, there's a line from James Joyce where he describes one character, Mr. Duffy lived a short distance from his body. And so there's a way in which we can live our life not really connected or attentive to our own body or our own emotions, our longings and needs and creativity. And so with mindfulness, not only can you attune to another person, noticing and feeling and sensing what's happening in them because you're present for them and yourself, you can also attune to your own body, your own heart, your own deep longings and creativity and love, and to your own self in the same way you can attune to an infant or a person in front of you.
Oh, well said, Dr. Jack Kornfield. Really talking about mothering and fathering the self. What about using mindfulness to increase secure attachment to another person?
Well, the word secure attachment, again, comes from the Western psychological research of attachment theory, which says that when a child feels their caregivers or their parents attuned to them, they begin to feel secure. And when they're secure, they grow, they thrive, they're not afraid to experiment and explore, which is what children want to do naturally. If they're insecure, if there isn't what's called secure attachment, then they're worried, they don't have the resiliency to take difficulties, they're afraid to explore, and so their life is diminished because they don't feel the security of that attachment to their parents or their caregivers. In the same way, even as adults, we can create a more secure or caring field of attachment or connection with our lovers, with our family members, with the people in our community, by our presence and by our attunement to ourselves and to them. The more present a person is to themselves and to the people around them, the greater sense of connection and security grows for all of those people. And it's quite beautiful. You know what it's like to be with someone who really listens to you, and you feel, that meeting, that lunch, or that time's over, I really felt listened to and connected, and it's so supportive to the heart and spirit to have that connection.
Yes, it is. And I would say the opposite is also true. When you are so in tune with another through a mindful practice, when there is a breach of any kind through an argument, there's also this yawning gap and great pain because you're so used to being in tune with each other.
That's true. And then what arises as you learn mindfulness, you also can begin to feel that deep intention to stay connected. So if you have a gap or conflict problem and you quiet yourself for a moment and ask, well, what is my best intention? You realize my intention is to reconnect, to find a way that we can work this out, to rebuild a bridge over that chasm, find a way to be in a wise or harmonious or more compassionate relationship, even to that difficulty.
This is Dr. Jack Kornfield. We're talking about neuroscience, how mindfulness increases well-being. He is going to speak with Dan Siegel November 15th and 16th for Omega in New York City on the New York City campus. And the title is The Neuroscience of Well-Being, Mindfulness, and Love. And if you would like information on attending, please go to our site, WNPR.org, and click on Programs for the Faith Middleton Show. We can tell you exactly how to do this. Recently, in a workshop, one of your colleagues, Joseph Goldstein, talked about taking a breath with full awareness, as if it were your last experience of breath. And I thought to myself, that is both useful and scary.
Yes. It is useful to take, as Carlos Castaneda wrote years ago, he said, to take death as an advisor, which means to say, quite honestly, we don't know how long we have on this blessed earth. And so to take each breath or each meeting with a person or each day, knowing that it might be your last, gives a quality of care, attention, best intention wherever you are. Now, it's scary, but the scary part is that we are vulnerable. We are, as human beings, limited to a certain lifespan. And you can either take that vulnerability and use it to hide away and shut down, which won't help. You're still going to have the same lifespan, maybe even less. Or to say, this life is precious and beautiful and mysterious. I will be here as fully as I can for it because of the memory that this could be the last breath. And so in the use of that, it's actually to enhance your life and to open your care and your love for this moment, for just what you have given to you. And the beautiful thing about mindfulness is that it comes from the deep understanding, and neuroscience is out getting this as well, that the human heart can be free no matter what circumstances. So when you see Aung San Suu Kyi come out of 17 years of house arrest, or Nelson Mandela walk out of prison after 27 years in Robben Island with such a gracious spirit of magnanimity and forgiveness and compassion, you realize that they can put your body in prison, but no one can imprison your spirit. And no matter what your difficulty that you find in your life, your spirit can still be free. Your heart can still be compassionate no matter where you are.
You, of course, make me think about Man's Search for Meaning, Dr. Frankl's book, and of course, this idea of, you know, watching in his story, watching him go through the worst suffering that a human being can face. And most people could not live through it. They broke under it.
Yes.
But some had the resilience to do it. So I am always so careful in this area not to say, no matter what happens to you, you can survive it. I'm not sure it's true. Do you think it is, Jack?
We have 1,000 generations of ancestors who survived, learned how to survive, and passed on life to us. In a way, they have our back. They brought us here. And that capacity for survival is there in each of us as human beings. Yes, there can be overwhelming difficulties that shut us down, tremendous trauma and great, you know, suffering. But we also have in us the capacity to survive. And one of the great gifts of mindfulness training is that it makes the capacity of presence and resilience grow in you. It brings a robustness to it so that when you do meet difficulty or when you're in the middle of it, you have these resources that Viktor Frankl wrote about that help people survive even those dire circumstances.
Yes. Let's take some calls. We are so fortunate to have one of the leading teachers in the United States of mindfulness, mindful awareness, with us, Dr. Jack Kornfield. His books have been translated into 20 languages, millions of copies sold, and we're very lucky to get him for the full hour, and we give you a chance to join the conversation with us. 203-776-9677. If you've been thinking about getting into mindfulness, or perhaps you've been trying mindfulness already or meditating. Rob Faith Middleton, welcome to the show.
Hey, Faith, how are you today?
I'm great, thanks. Go ahead, Rob.
I wanted to say I actually called in yesterday. I was the guy.
I remember.
Yes, and I want to say Brendan of mine, Jim Hughes, got me started on mindfulness meditation about a year ago.
So, Rob, can I ask you a question? Because, Jack, I wanted to let you know that Rob joined us yesterday and explained that he had suffered at a young age very severe traumatic brain injury, and it did affect him in a lifelong way. And so this is great, Rob, that you've started to get into this. And do you feel it making a difference in your life or not?
Oh, very much so. I think because of it, I have come more to recognize what is going on around me, more so than I ever have my entire life, I think. It has made me become more, I think, based on reality rather than fiction, if you catch my drift.
Yeah, I do. I do. Jack, do you have a comment or a question for Rob?
First, Rob, I'm very moved by you and what you are doing and what you say. And I can hear that you have found in yourself the capacity to develop greater presence, less distractedness, less self-judgment, less of the kinds of confusions that we're all subject to, but that you have perhaps more than the ordinary through the brain injury, that you've discovered this wonderful gift, that it's possible to balance your own heart and mind, to live in a different way through these trainings. And I'm just grateful for your call and for the transformation that you are making for yourself.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rob. Thank you so much. All right. And if you would like to join the conversation with me and Dr. Jack Kornfield, a teacher of mindfulness, mindful awareness, one of the greats in the United States of America, on the show for the full hour, please do it. 203-776-WNPR. We'll take a quick break and then more of Jack Kornfield. Thanks to you for listening and to our talented team, senior producer Lori Mack and producer Jonathan McNichol. Our conversation with Dr. Jack Kornfield continues. Neuroscience, how mindfulness increases well-being. As we go back to that conversation, I wanted to say, if you want recipe ideas, you know, this time we're in right now, for supper this week, the Faith Middleton Food Schmooze online site has them, including the wildly popular moist, crispy meatloaf baked in a brown paper bag. I cannot believe the response to that recipe. We have also posted some of my favorite recipes for Thanksgiving. You could see them right now at WNPR.org. You'll find Michael Chiarello's Spice Reb for a flavorful, beautifully browned turkey. Lemon in the cavity, lemon juice on the outside with lots of olive oil, and then this rub, this fennel spice rub, and you sit the turkey on top of fresh rosemary sprigs. Plus, our Thanksgiving prep kit includes Parmesan-crusted creamed corn, cornbread stuffing muffins that are baked in a muffin tin. It's all online now at WNPR.org. Just click on Programs for the Faith Middleton Show, and then start scrolling through the pages for our recipes and our value wine recommendations. Also, if you can't do it right now, you know, when you put your hand on the doorknob to walk in the door tonight, say to yourself, "Up, reminder, I was going to go to WNPR.org and see the food schmooze online and check out all these recipes." Okay, Dr. Jack Kornfield is with us. And Jack, we have Betty on the line. Welcome to the show, Betty.
Good afternoon. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Welcome.
And I am very grateful to have this programming available to us.
Oh,
and I just wanted to say that I have been practicing mindfulness for a few years now. I am dealing with a very intense chronic pain situation.
Mm-hmm.
And I have noticed that when I lose track of my mindfulness practice, I lose track of what is going on with me physically and mentally and emotionally and spiritually.
Betty, can I ask a quick question of you? As you, I don't mean to interrupt, but I want, this is so important what you're saying, because we know that in hospitals and with, uh-huh. with practitioners and teachers, that this is being reported as very helpful for people in pain.
Uh-huh.
And so before we have Dr. Kornfield come into this conversation, when you imagine your painful places, what do you do in a mindful way?
I will first begin by calming my breathing, and then I will send a focused ray of light to the area that is most intensely painful and almost watch the light dissipate In other words, watch it just open and open until the pain and the light are one.
And in
a visualization. Sometimes, I will say truthfully, sometimes this enables me to get into a more comfortable place. Sometimes it is not as effective as I would like it to be.
Okay.
But I try to let go of the need for a result or any particular outcome and just stay with the process and keep bringing my mind back, and centering myself.
Betty and Dr. Kornfield, I have heard people talk about something similar, what you're saying, Betty, also this technique of envisioning a softening around the pain spot. Jack Kornfield, a response?
Yes, sometimes that softening can be visualized the way you hold a crying child instead of resisting or trying to do something to the pain. If you have an infant that's crying and you've already fed them or changed their diaper, then what comforts them is to hold them. And I love what you're saying, Betty. And in fact, I'm ready to, you know, invite you to come and assist teaching in New York.
Well, that would be delightful.
your description and your understanding is beautiful, and it's particularly important because you're dealing with something as intense as chronic pain.
Well, I also wanted to say, Dr. Kornfield, I am so grateful to you personally because I have read all of your books, and I have tried to incorporate many of the suggestions you have made throughout your journey with mindfulness into my own practice, and you are a great gift. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, Betty.
I'm very glad to hear that it's been so helpful to you. I really appreciate what you're doing.
Thank you, Betty, so much for calling the show and adding your voice.
Thank you, Faith, very much. It was a joy to talk to you.
Me too. 203-776-WNPR. I remember, Jack, that John Kabat-Zinn, who was also very instrumental in creating a language for meditation for Westerners and a kind of translation of all this complicated stuff coming out of India and Burma and Thailand. And his work first involved people who were in pain, asking for them because he said, I think I can do something with this. Isn't that right?
That's correct. He started in a medical school in Massachusetts and asked for the patients, the other doctors were unable to help. Often it was chronic pain, other problems as well. And he began to teach people how to be mindful with their bodies and breath so that they, just as Betty described, so that they could calm themselves, soften, bring the capacity of opening to their body, and with it also to relax and ease their minds and their worries so that they could live with the circumstance of their body in a tender and respectful and compassionate way.
What a counterintuitive thing, though, Jack. You know, if someone is hitting you on the head with a hammer, your tendency is to put your hands up and block it and run away.
You should protect yourself. Mindfulness also includes the wisdom of care and self-protection. So if you're in a circumstance where you're being hurt, whether it's bodily or emotionally, you become mindful of it, and then you remove yourself. You get out of there.
Mm-hmm.
But some circumstances, and this was true for John Kabat-Zinn in the hospital, there are people that have gone through all that Western medicine had to offer. They were still in great pain, or they still had other problems and limitations, and then it became critical to say, here we are, stuck with this circumstance. How do I live with this in a gracious and a wise way so that I can actually have my life and not be taken down by this?
Mm.
And this is true for all of us. Yes, you want the wisdom to remove yourself from difficult circumstances when you can, to protect yourself and others as best you can. And still, there will be gain and loss and praise and blame and pleasure and pain that change all the time for people. And to learn to be present in a kind with loving awareness and mindfulness give you a resiliency. To train in mindfulness in this very simple way helps your capacity to be present for the whole range of joy and love and connection and also the difficulties that come.
Isn't this great? Dr. Jack Kornfield is with us. He's going to be speaking about a neuroscience, how mindfulness increases well-being, and he's doing that November 15th and 16th in New York City under the auspices of Omega for the New York City campus, and you can go to our website to find out more, WNPR.org. Click on Programs for the Faith Middleton Show, and you'll see everything about Dr. Kornfield and about their talk that they're giving. Let me take a call. Lata, Faith Middleton, and Dr. Kornfield. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Go ahead, Lata.
Okay. The question I had was, is the practice of mindfulness a useful treatment in situations of psychological trauma, abuse, and is it being used in psychotherapy as of now?
That's a great question, Lata. And Dr. Kornfield, I know you've had experience with trauma and the brain and where it settles and how it stays in the brain. And how does mindfulness become useful?
It's a really important question because many of the people listening, many of us have histories or experiences of trauma. And often the trauma gets locked in the body, in the nervous system. We go into fight, flight, or freeze, and then after the trauma, it remains somehow in us, and we get triggered easily. So the good trauma treatment and mindfulness is being used throughout many forms of psychotherapy now. Good trauma treatment involves first establishing a sense of safety and calm and well-being from which to approach the trauma so you don't re-traumatize yourself. And that can be done through mindfulness of the breathing of the body or a visualization of well-being. And then usually sitting with another person so they can help guide you, a good therapist or trauma practitioner, will then help you little by little remember or go to those places in the body or in the spirit, in the heart, where you still carry the pain of that trauma and begin to allow it to open, held by compassion, mindfulness, rather than confusion and fear. And little by little, the nervous system then naturally releases. The story gets told, feelings are felt without overwhelming you if you do it little by little. And you can actually release and move from significant trauma. We're seeing this work with vets who are returning from Afghanistan and Iraq. We're seeing it in hospitals, that this capacity to be present and mindfulness is one of the great tools when it's used skillfully to help release trauma.
And there are therapists, to Lata's second question, there are therapists who are very interested and specializing in mindfulness, Buddhism, and psychotherapy, as you do, Jack. Red Thunder Wolf, welcome to the show. Faith Middleton, go ahead.
How you doing out there?
It was great to have you on the show. What is your thought?
I'm not talking about the trauma. It's what to do with it when you have it. And for me, I stopped and think about it, and then I start all over. I learned to accept what I have. Because if I can't accept it and think about the past, then I'll be reliving the past.
Jack, are you getting what Red Thunder is talking about?
I am, and there's a lot of wisdom in what Red Thunder talks about of starting anew. In the Zen tradition, it's called beginner's mind. It's never too late to start to let go of the past and start afresh. And at the same time, what Red Thunder talks about is an acceptance to the past. If you've been betrayed or you've gone through some difficulty, and you still struggle against it, or you can't forgive yourself, or you can't forgive the circumstance, then it's as if it still locked you in. It's like the two ex-prisoners of war who met. They'd been in a terrible prison of war camp, and years later one said, "Have you forgiven your captors?" And the second one said, "No, never, I'll never forgive them." And the first one said, "Well, then they still have you in prison, don't they?" So The wisdom that Red Thunder points to is letting go of the past. Sometimes we need help to do that. We need to sit with another person, with a healer or a therapist or someone expert in trauma, as you suggested, Faith, who can help us listen to our story, feel our feelings in a wise way, and then do just what Red Thunderwolf spoke of. Release, accept that that's the way it has been, to give up. Someone said forgiveness means giving up all hope for a better past. It was the way that it was, to hold it with compassion and then begin again. So thank you.
Yes, thank you so much. Jack Kornfield, oh, here's our number, 203-776-WNPR. The world is unpredictable, and out of nowhere, this means that things can change. It's been said that spiritual geniuses can hold this thought constantly, pretty much. And for many people, though, if focusing on the unpredictability of, you know, each moment or of life in general is unmooring. It's frightening. And I think my question for you is, don't we need some kind of plausible deniability to go forward and get through?
Oh, your question is beautiful. Those who are wise relax with uncertainty. Somerset Maugham, the great, you know, English novelist, wrote, there are three rules for producing a great English novel. He went on, unfortunately, no one knows what they are. And in some way, we want to get the rules so that we're secure and that everything will work out just how, you know, in the best way and we plan. But the truth is that we're not secure, that we are vulnerable as human beings. And what makes life so tender and magical, and the fact that we're vulnerable to one another and to the air that we breathe and the environment that we have to care for, or it impacts us and those around us, actually makes us more compassionate, makes us more concerned, makes us more caring. So instead of seeing it as something that's frightening, the invitation of mindfulness and loving awareness is to, as in the old saying, go with the flow, to find the resilience and rest, instead of holding on to things, to rest in the ability to change and move with circumstances, and know that you have a good heart and a capacity for presence that can manage and live wisely through all the inevitable praise and blame and gain and loss and pleasure and pain that make up human incarnation. You were born in the human realm, and it's nature. And to live wisely is to relax and say, yes, I accept, and I can live with this with mindfulness, with loving awareness, with compassion. And you can learn to do so. That's a beautiful gift.
So, in other words, to hold many things to be true at the same time.
Oh, lovely. Thank you, Faith. Yeah.
Okay. Allison Faith Middleton with Dr. Jack Kornfield. So lucky to have him on the show. Go ahead, Allison.
Hi, thank you. I'm a 3L at UConn Law, and I'm taking a class on alternative dispute resolution. And yesterday, actually, we were talking about the importance of mindfulness for attorneys, where your mind is going a million miles a minute thinking ahead. And particularly with mediation, it's important that you're mindful, that you're in the moment, that you're listening to people's interests and needs and the needs of your clients. So it's good timing.
So, Allison, it sounds like you, in fact, have to do a couple things at once in this final minute of the show. You have to think ahead and be in the moment.
Yeah.
If it's working well.
That's the goal.
Yeah. Thank you.
And to listen with mindfulness. Beautifully. I was part of a mindfulness conference at Berkeley Law School. Judges and professors all saying a good jurist, a good lawyer, a good mediator needs to learn to be mindful and stay quite present for themselves and the circumstance and the people they're listening to.
And this is also how people do not get burned out, Allison. Thank you so much. Glad you called. Jack Kornfield, can't thank you enough for being on the show, that you spent an hour. I wanted to mention that Dr. Kornfield has many best-selling books, sold millions, 20 languages. And if you want to hear him and his presentation on mindfulness, and that increases well-being, with Dan Siegel on November 15th and 16th. Go to our site, WNPR.org, and we'll tell you all about how to register for that. Thank you, Jack.
Thank you, Faith. It's a pleasure.
Me too. All right. Thank you for listening. As always, this show is about the richness of life, and you can find the books, people, great recipes, value wines, and cocktails we feature right now at WNPR.org or later on, too. Click on Programs in New Haven. I'm Faith Middleton.